Those that are staying here can turn to 2 Corinthians chapter 11. This is really my dad's month to be teaching Sunday school. But because of his health things, he's been farming it out, so you're stuck with me just for, maybe just for today, we'll see. Y'all can pray for him that he can get back to teaching because we need him. Look at 2 Corinthians chapter 11. In case y'all haven't heard, my mom had her hip surgery and she ought to be getting released at this moment while we speak. Hopefully, go home and they'll have somebody go out to her house to give her therapy. And my dad's health is improving slowly, so Lord is answering prayer. All right, let's read 2 Corinthians chapter 11, start at verse 1. Would to God ye could bear with me a little in my folly, and indeed bear with me. For I am jealous over you with godly jealousy. For I have espoused you to one husband, that I may present you as a chaste virgin to Christ. But I fear, lest by any means, as the serpent beguiled Eve through his subtlety, so your minds should be corrupted from the simplicity that is in Christ. For if he that cometh preacheth another Jesus, whom we have not preached, or if ye receive another spirit which ye have not received, or another gospel which ye have not accepted, ye might well bear with him. For I suppose I was not a whit behind the very chiefest apostles, but though I be rude in speech, yet not in knowledge, but we have been throughly made manifest among you in all things. Have I committed an offense in abasing myself that ye might be exalted? Because I have preached to you the gospel of God freely, I robbed other churches, taking wages of them to do you service. And when I was present with you and wanted, I was chargeable to no man. For that which was lacking to me, the brethren which came from Macedonia supplied. And in all things I have kept myself from being burdensome unto you, and so will I keep myself. As the truth of Christ is in me, no man shall stop me of this boasting in the regions of Achaia. Wherefore, because I love you not, God knoweth, but what I do, that I will do, that I may cut off occasion from them which desire occasion, that wherein they glory, they may be found even as we. For such are false apostles, deceitful workers, transforming themselves into the apostles of Christ. And no marvel, for Satan himself is transformed into an angel of light. Therefore it is no great thing if his ministers also be transformed as the ministers of righteousness, whose end shall be according to their works. I'm going to stop there, but not because Paul is done with the same theme, just because I'm not going to try to go into everything that he mentions in the last few chapters of 2 Corinthians. The truth is, the whole book of 2 Corinthians was written, Paul trying to explain to the Corinthians his peculiar position toward them, and that they owed him, for their own good, they owed him some deference. They owed him some benefit of the doubt. They owed him some obedience. They owed him some respect, more than any of the other people that came by. But I want you just to notice one thing, one particular part that he mentions here, and he winds up saying that there are false apostles. I want you to look in verse 4. He says, for if he that cometh. Now the whole point that I'm trying to make here is I've been dealing with the idea of apostles, and that the apostles were not only had a special calling, but they had a special fulfillment of that calling in that these were exceptional people. They were exceptional leaders of men. They were exceptional in so many ways that and that they did their job so well prepared were they to do their job, to witness to Jesus Christ, and then to truly care about the people that they preached to and what have you. But they all knew that their ministry was temporary. They weren't going to be around. They knew that someone was coming after them. And we saw this many times. We read over there in Acts chapter 20 where Paul says, you know, after my departing, grievous wolves are going to come into the flock, and they're not going to spare the flock, and they're going to be doing all these things for the wrong motives and the wrong reasons. And he seems almost to be despairing of preparing them enough so that they would not be fooled by these people that were coming. And here he mentions it again, if he that cometh. What is the possibility? Somebody's going to come after I'm gone, and he's going to preach another Jesus. Or he's going to give another spirit. He's going to have another spirit. And in that mind, the spirit there is talking about an attitude, talking about a motivation. He's going to have another spirit, another way of acting, another way of being than that we had, and you hadn't received it. Or another gospel, some twisted up gospel that makes a little bit difference. He says, and you just might receive him. You might be fooled by him. Even Jesus talked about false prophets and false Christs that come that have, they're going to have miracles and things, and that if it were possible, they could deceive even the very elect. That is, these men who had invested their lives trying to save people and establish sound doctrine and establish the church, and they loved the church, they loved the work of God, they loved the people of God, they knew that it was going to be out of their hands very soon, and that other people were going to come with a different attitude, with a different doctrine, with different motivations, and it bothered them. Now, I can say that I understand, not just in a theoretical sense, I can say that I truly understand. Roland understands. I know that he does, because he's been with me. We have established churches. And let me tell you something, when you win a family to the Lord, you become jealous over them with a godly jealousy. You know, you understand what jealousy is, right? And I'm not going to teach on jealousy, but this is a huge, huge important doctrine in the Bible. And jealousy is good. Jealousy is put into you by God. You ought to be jealous of. And now jealousy, we use it sometimes wrongly. We use the word jealousy in the sense of envy. You'll say, I'm so jealous of that person, you know, and that's not what the word jealous means at all. Envy has to do with what is not yours. But jealousy has to do with what is yours. There's a huge difference between jealousy and envy. And he says, I'm jealous. You ought to be jealous over your wife and over your husband. Jealous because they're yours. And God gave them to you. And you ought to be jealous. I know that this gets messed up. Jealousy gets messed up. It becomes confused and horrible when in polygamous societies it's just destroyed, and then in all these libertine societies where they think, you know, well, a little adultery, no big deal, whatever. No, you should have some jealousy. I know wives who, for the economic reasons, will allow their husbands to just basically sleep with whoever they want. They just think, you know, he's providing for me and my children, you know, it's his business. Oh, no. You ought to have some self-respect. God's given you something, and you ought to be jealous over what He's given you. And how about your children? You've got a precious little daughter. Daddy, you jealous over your precious little daughter? Somebody wants to, you know, I got news for you. Somebody wants to come in there and take your place in that daughter's life. You might just be a little bit angry. You might say, you know, I'm going to do something about that. I know that because I did that. I had kids coming knocking on the door of my house saying they wanted to talk to one of my daughters. And I said, well, why? I don't like you. I had one guy come and ask to talk to Jenny, and he had earrings all the way up his ears. And I said, well, I'm not letting you talk to Jenny. Well, why not? Well, because I don't like your ears. One guy drove up on a motorcycle, said he wanted to talk to Jenny. I said, no, go away. I'm not interested. One guy came up and said he wanted to talk to Lena, and I said, go away. I heard that you're the one who did that tagging, that the graffiti on that wall over there, put my daughter's name on the wall. You're the one? You're the one? I don't want her to have friends like you. Well, I'm just being friends. Well, I'm telling you, you're not going to be friends with my daughter. Why? Well, she's my daughter. I'm not going to let anybody talk to her, and anybody take her out, and anybody treat her, and anybody try to fool her. And now I'll tell you something else. If I had caught him trying, still after I told him to get lost, I would not be terribly responsible for my actions. I dream about those kind of things. I daydream about those kind of things. Finally get to take out my anger on somebody where it's justified. But you can get too angry also, fathers. So anyway, one way or the other. jealousy. I'm talking about jealousy. Here's the idea. Roland and me, we in here, there's probably other people in here know exactly what I'm talking about. We started churches. We preach out on the street. We put in our time. And God opens a door. God gives us a contact. And I've seen Roland do it. I've seen myself. I've seen Brent. I've seen Joe. All the people I've worked with over the years, we've all had this exact same experience. We go. We spend a day a week. For weeks on end, for months, sometimes 6 months, sometimes years, going to the same house, teaching the Bible, sometimes lasting hours into the night, teaching the Bible to this family, and eventually the family gets saved. They get baptized. They get added to the church. And then after a while, you hear that somebody's going there and discipling them that's not from our church, that's not from our tradition, that has nothing to do with us, and that their interests are not the welfare of those people. And we know because we are jealous. And you say, well, it might be an unreasonable jealousy, and it certainly might. But at the same time, it's a jealousy that's natural to us. We go and we see somebody teaching something that they ought not, or somebody teaching for another motive, and it makes us angry. And sometimes it's hard to counteract. I know we know what we're talking about because we've lost some people to other people who did not love those people like we did. They're now going to another church. Some of them actually think now that we're heretics. I've had them tell me to my face, somebody, I won to the Lord. They say I'm a servant of the devil. Or that I'm being used by the devil or something of that nature. Or that I'm proud or and they find some fault in me, which is no doubt true in many ways. They find fault in me. And because of the fault they find in me, they no longer trust me. What I'm going to tell you here is that there is such a thing as a godly jealousy over people you've spoken the word of the Lord to and you care about and you have the best interest of their lives in your mind, and somebody else comes and they don't. And fathers know very well that sometimes that young man that wants to date his daughter, he knows very well he doesn't have the best interest of his daughter in mind. We know that. And we also know that in the depths of our heart, no matter how many faults we have the best interest of our daughters in mind. We know that. And it's not a debate. That young man wants to date my daughter, I know he's probably not got her best interest in mind. Sorry, my sons-in-laws. You know, I treated y'all that way. I guarantee you, I was rough on you. I know. And now I believe that you love my daughters, and I know that you have their best interest in mind. I understand that now. But forgive me for being a little bit rough on you at the beginning. You're going to be that way with your daughters. You see, you wait and watch. It's going to be that way. Why? Because you know the difference, and you are willing to stand up and fight for what, even if you can't win. You're going to stand up and fight. Now, this was Paul. He says, I'm going to be leaving and somebody else is coming. And I happen to know something about those other people that are coming. They don't love you like I love you. They don't care about your souls and your wealth. They got other motivations. This is the series that I'm going to call anti-apostles. Not just false apostles, but anti-apostles. What I'm trying to say, I don't know, sort of like the bizarro world in Superman, you know, where everything's backwards. Everything's upside down. Everything is weird. And, dark is light and light is dark and good is evil and evil is good. Everything's upside down. Everything's backwards. Here we have the apostles. They had a certain way of being. How were they? Well, he mentions all kinds of things here. And if you read the whole 2 Corinthians, you could make a list of so many different ways that he acted toward them. But he says things like, I was gentle among you. But somebody else is going to come in and they're going to be rough. And I was selfless. And somebody else is going to come in and they're going to be selfish. And I was this way and somebody else is going to come in. And I worked hard to be chargeable to no man. But somebody else is going to come in there and lay grievous burdens on you. And he says, I don't like it, and I'm angry, and I want to teach you something so so that you will be able to judge between these people and not be fooled by these sorry, no good leaders. Now, for some reason, we all need leaders. I was watching both the different political conventions, and I'm just amazed at how people want a hero. Trust me, whatever they said in those conventions and whatever they say about our past presidents or whatever, it is not probably half true. All of them. You name them. It's probably not half true. Any of them. You would be wise not to believe what they say about them. You would be wise to take everything they say with a grain of salt because they're a bunch of liars. And let me tell you something. What you read about our history in history books, in our elementary schools, it's not even half true. I know this for a fact. I was taught history, the Texas history, here in Texas. And then I saw the same, my kids went to school in Mexico, and I saw the same wars explained from a different point of view. And I'm thinking, well, now what is true? What really did happen? And so I do a little bit of investigation on myself, and let me tell you something. Both sides are lying. They're not telling you the truth. And I'm not going to tell it to you right now either. I'm not going to tell you what happened in Texas history because I just don't have time. It's a fascinating study, and you know, there's all kinds. But I'm telling you, you can't trust the stories that they tell. And there's an awful lot of need among people for a hero. They need somebody to just be larger than life in it. And you know, a hero is important. I think it's normal. I think it's something. But you do realize that we're talking about leaders and the difference between a leader and a follower. And of course, you know what the difference between a leader and a follower is. The leader is out there by himself. You guys remember that the dissolving of the Soviet Empire, right? It began with one man. Back in the early 90s, I guess, maybe late 80s. I don't remember exactly when it was. Might have been early 80s. I don't know. But this man over there in Poland crosses that fence by himself. Nobody else was crossing that fence. Now, a whole lot of people crossed the fence after him. But somebody climbed that fence by himself and walked in by himself. Now, I don't remember all the details about that. I just remember it requires a leader. And when you don't have a leader, then you're stuck like those armies of Israel when that giant comes out there and mocks the God of Israel and says, well, hey, send me a champion. Send somebody to fight me. And nobody would. Even tall, big, strong, experienced warriors wouldn't get out there and fight that guy. But then somebody said, I'd do it, and went out there with a sling and killed him. But you know, he did it by himself. He walked well with God, but he walked out there by himself. He didn't have the army all around him. It's easy to do something in a group. But now how about when somebody actually does, a true hero, a true leader, someone stands out and actually does the work, and then somebody else comes in, and everything's different about this person, but for some reason, people are fooled by it. People are fooled by no account. They start focusing on the wrong things. Anyway, I'm going deeper than I wanted to go at this moment. Let me just explain to you what I'm trying to talk about when I say anti-apostles. Jesus and the apostles mentioned the kind of people they were worried about many, many times. They warned you about what kind of people to avoid and what kind of people not to believe and what kind of people were coming and were going to try to deceive. And they made the comparison between themselves and how they acted and the people that are coming in the future. They were talking about somebody going to come in the future and they're going to have a difference between us. They're going to say something like, and I listed out, I had so many different passages, so many, and I had to kind of like consolidate many of them, and I narrowed it down to 10. I got it here somewhere, or 10 or maybe 9, I'm not sure. Let me read them out to you so you know where I'm going. All right, you've got the hypocrite. That's what I'm going to deal with this morning. You got the hireling. You've got the covetous. You've got the preeminent. You have the judge. You have the blind guide. You have the scholar. You have the confidant. And you have the earthly. These are people, they said, watch out for people. They're going to act like this. I'm going to deal with the hypocrite at least this morning. I don't know if I can get to the hireling. But I want you to consider the type of things that we're talking about here. Here are these apostles. They were not covetous. They didn't want what you had. They didn't want your stuff. They were willing to teach you the gospel freely, that sort of thing. And yet somebody's going to come later on and their interest is your stuff. They want your money. They want to have lots of stuff themselves. They are covetous. I wasn't going to deal with covetous right now. I was going to deal with the hypocrite. Hold on. Anyway, the idea is you see the difference. You can easily see the difference between somebody who actually does not want your stuff and you try to give him stuff and he won't take it. You can see the difference between that and somebody else who is actively trying to get your stuff. And he wants to live it up and have lots of stuff. And surely you can see the difference. But then why do people follow others that are wanting their stuff? Do you realize that there are people who have actually been so idolizing of some supposedly spiritual leader that they were willing to share their wives? It happens. At least that's the accusation. David Koresh, they said he had other people's wives. And surely you can see the difference between somebody who wants to borrow your wife. Did you lose your mind when you joined this cult? Did you lose your mind? Did you all of a sudden think, that this guy, he's spiritual, he's of God, he's wonderful, he has all sorts of knowledge, he's eloquent, he wants my wife. He wants my wife? Hello? What if he wants your money? What if he wants your stuff? Can you not reasonably say, I'm not going to follow him? That guy's not right. And yet it's happened throughout history. People who otherwise might have been just fine. And yet they believe some guy who wants stuff. They want to have more stuff. Or they have some other ideas. They're completely different. They are anti-apostles. They're not like Jesus was. They're not like the apostles were. They got their own agenda. They got their own thing. Let's move into it. Look at Matthew chapter 6. We're going to deal with the first one, which is the hypocrite. If you want to know who Jesus warned us about more than anybody else, it's this one. He says, you watch out for the hypocrite. Jesus was not a hypocrite. And the apostles were not hypocrites. They were not making a fair show in the flesh. They were not pretending to be what they are not. And they warned us, watch out for these people who are making a show. Watch out for the people who are showing themselves one thing and when they're not really that. And look at Matthew chapter 6, start at verse 1. Take heed, Jesus says, take heed that ye do not your alms before men to be seen of them. Otherwise ye have no reward of your Father which is in heaven. Therefore when thou doest thine alms, do not sound a trumpet before thee as the hypocrites do in the synagogues and in the streets. Who's he talking about? Some religious leaders that get out on the street and make a big show of their religion or their religiosity. For they, that they may have glory of men. Verily I say unto you, they have their reward. But when thou doest alms, let not thy left hand know what thy right hand doeth. Why are you talking about it? Why do you want other people to hear about it? Why do you want that? He says, don't be that way. That thine alms may be in secret, and thy Father which seeth in secret himself shall reward thee openly. And when thou prayest, thou shalt not be as who? Those hypocrites that Jesus couldn't stand. And don't act like Jesus didn't have any discerning opinion about people. He despised the hypocrite. It bothered him. He saw the hypocrite. He despised it. He said, I can't stand that. And God says that many times. Don't buy into this another Jesus that people preach that had no real emotions and walked around with his hands folded. This is not the one. He says, I got some things against those people. And I can imagine him using his finger and pointing at them. He says, and when thou prayest, thou shalt not be as the hypocrites are, for they love to pray standing in the synagogues and in the corners of the streets, that they may be seen of men. Verily I say unto you, they have their reward. But thou, when thou prayest, enter into thy closet. And when thou hast shut thy door, pray to thy Father which is in secret, that thy Father which seeth in secret shall reward thee openly. But when ye pray, use not vain repetitions. I'm going too far. That's far enough at the moment. What Jesus says is, I see these hypocrites all the time. They are leaders in their religion, and they are doing things. I can tell they're doing things to be seen of men. And you know what He's saying? We're not like that. He tells His apostles and His disciples, you don't be like that. You're not going to be praying out in the street. Like that brother that prayed with us the other day, man, comes up and grabs us both and says, Lord! And he starts hollering his prayers. No, no, no. We're not going to be like that. Why? Well, because Jesus is saying, they're hypocrites. The only reason why they talk so loud when they're praying out on the street is to be heard by men. And they're wanting their glory from men. But you know what amazes me? It's how many hypocrites are in the church today and do all of their works to be seen of men. And I can start marking off some things, but I think it gets a little clearer when you read Matthew 23. Look at Matthew 23. Just for the sake of time, oh, who cares about the time? There's no way I'm going to finish this thing. Let's see. Matthew chapter 23, look at verse 1. Then spake Jesus to the multitude and to His disciples, saying, the scribes and the Pharisees, who are we talking about? Leaders, religious leaders. The scribes and the Pharisees sit in Moses' seat. They have a position of authority in that religion. All therefore, whatsoever they bid you observe, that observe and do. They put a burden on you? All right, go ahead and do it. But do not ye after their works. For they say and do not. For they bind heavy burdens and grievous to be borne. That will be more found in what I divided up as the judge, the burdensome judge. Be grievous to be borne, and lay them on men's shoulders, but they themselves will not move them with one of their fingers. But all their works they do for to be seen of men. How do they do that? What do they do in order to be seen of men? They make broad their phylacteries. Well, that might be a little bit confusing. And it's not just because it's Old English, it's because the Jews had phylacteries. And the phylacteries were these fringes that they put on their garments, and they would actually enlarge them to make it look like they had spent more time doing whatever it is that thing signified. In other words, if you have something you put on your garment, you on the end of your garment, you put something on it that indicates that you've been praying that day, and you did that to say that you've been praying that day, and you make it a whole lot bigger, you know, or you do something else, you make it change so that other people look at you and say, wow, he does a lot of praying, you know. Now Jesus says that's what they do. They make a change in their appearance so that you'll think something about them. And they enlarge the borders of their garments. And love, how about that? They love the uppermost rooms at feasts. You know any Christians like that? You know any religious leaders like that? That want that preeminent place? You know what we could do? We could have ourselves a special parking place here that says pastors. Right? We could do that. And you know, a whole lot of churches do that. Have a special seat for the pastor. I've seen, looks like a throne. A special seat on the podium for the pastor. Looks like a throne. And I'm thinking, man, did they ever read Matthew 23? Be careful. Be real careful about that. They love the uppermost rooms at feasts and the chief seats in the synagogues, greetings in the markets, and to be called of men rabbi. Oh, they want titles. They want titles. They want to be called reverend. Or much worse than that. And be not ye called rabbi, Jesus says. We're going to be different. He said, we're not going to be like them. For one is your master, even Christ, and all ye are brethren. And call no man. You know, you really ought to consider that. All ye are brethren. Don't let somebody have that special clergy look to them and act like they're different. They want to dress up different than you. Now, why would somebody want to dress different than the rest of us? You know what they call it? They call it habits. I don't even know why they call it habits, but that's what they call it. Habits. They have religious habits. And I don't mean customs or, you know, things that they do a lot. I mean, it's something that they wear. What is this about, you know, turning your collar around so that people will know you're a priest or you're a minister? What is it about that? Why in the world would you dress like that? Why would you wear a robe? Why would you wear a vestment? Why would you wear a pointy hat? I think you know. I'm pretty sure you know that when God looks at you, He sees right to the bone. They do that to be seen of men. All right, all ye brethren, and call no man your father upon the earth. Now, contrary to what Roman Catholics will insist upon, and trust me, I don't want to just pick on Roman Catholics, but I would not be true to God if I did not point this out. They call their religious leaders father. And they'll say, well, you know, some son somewhere called his father father. But that's not what he's talking about. He's talking about religious leaders who are not your father. It's fine for me to call my father father. That's fine. But it's the idea of you calling my father father that would be against what Jesus says. The idea is a religious leader wanting you to call him your spiritual father. And if you do that, you've disobeyed Jesus. And yet they do that all the time. And it's in their Bible the same way. Now, they get a little irritated at me when I say Mister. But I will not call him Father. I know it's their title, and you're disrespectful to them if you don't say Father so-and-so. But I'm sorry. Jesus said not to. You do not call him your Father. It's not right. Now, why would somebody follow the anti-apostle? Because this is the opposite of what the apostles taught and acted. This is not the way they were. They did not go around wanting the upper rooms in the synagogues. They did not go around wanting this outward show of honor. They were not into that. They were different. And the people could see it and they were wondering. But as soon as the apostles fade into the distance, somebody else comes up and they wear a robe to show how righteous they are and they want to be called rabbi and father and everything else. And then they start wearing gold and huge rings and even a crown on their head or a mitre or something of that nature. And the whole Christian world starts saying, isn't that something? And he says, these are false apostles. They're not like us at all. And you know, they go around saying they are the successors. They are the success. Well, if they're the successors, why don't they act like the originals? The fact is, there are no successors to the apostles, but there ought to be some followers. There ought to be people who follow their example. There ought to be people who act like they do, not interested in their money and not interested in their glory. He says they want to be called Father and call no man on upon your Father upon the earth, for one is your Father. Who is your spiritual Father? Just God in heaven. He is your spiritual Father, none other. Do not be called, and neither be ye called masters, for one is your Master. But he that is greatest among you shall be your servant. They want to be served. Whosoever shall exalt himself shall be abased, and he that shall humble himself shall be exalted. Now we're going to get into this blind guide speech, which is going to have something to be dealt with later on, but I just want to read it because it does mention every time, you're a bunch of hypocrites. How much Jesus despised the hypocrisy in these religious people. Woe unto you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites. For you shut up the kingdom of heaven against men, for you neither go in yourselves, neither suffer ye them that are going in to go in. Woe unto you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites. For you devour widows' houses, and for a pretense make long prayers. Therefore ye shall receive the greater damnation. Be careful of the Bibles that skip that verse entirely. Just toss it out there. They don't like that. Jehovah's Witnesses get rid of that verse because it talks about greater damnation, which in their minds cannot exist. There's no such thing as greater damnation. They think it's, you know, you're all condemned to die, and that's it. It's all over. There's no greater than any other greater. It's just, you know, but the Bible talks about different degrees of damnation. Now, here it is. He says, you've got some religious people that are going to, for a pretense, make long prayers. You know what I see? That's all over the place right now. For a pretense, making long prayers. Now, he also says that the pretense is to devour their houses. which has a specific application in priests who believe in purgatory and tell the poor widow lady that to get your husband out of purgatory, you got to pay me to say a mass for him. And believe me, those masses are not cheap. Hundreds and hundreds of dollars per, and they'll tell you you need to do nine of them. Nine of them to get them out of purgatory. They are making a long prayer. In fact, that prayer is not even that long. I've listened to those purgatory masses, you know, and they're not very long. In fact, they'll mention 50 people at the same time, and they all got paid their $400 apiece. Same day. Oh, let me tell you something. They are anti-apostles. They are false apostles. They have transformed themselves into the ministers of Christ, and they are not anything like them. They're not like them. They're different. Now, you know what I see? I see that there are parts of this found in all the areas of Christianity. In fact, all the different religions of the world. But even in Christianity, where Jesus made it very clear, don't be like that, don't follow those people, be careful of those people. And they were jealous over them with godly jealousy, saying, don't be like these people. And yet it's all over. We see it. We see even Protestant ministers wanting to be called reverend, wanting to dress a little different, wanting to have a little different, want to have a special place to sit, want to have certain kinds of honors. They want that. They crave it just like all the other ones. And Paul is warning them just so carefully, and Jesus is warning them, saying, they're hypocrites. They're wanting to be seen of men. They're wanting glory from men. They're making pretense. They're doing things, faking it. You be careful of pretense. Now listen, there's a difference between a hypocrite and a deflector. I know that they're similar, but a hypocrite is someone who actually does something actively to be thought of in a way that they're really not. But a deflector is someone who doesn't want you to know just how bad they are, so they kind of deflect the blame. They are sort of hypocritical, but there's a huge difference. All of us avoid blame. All of us hide our sins. All of us do, folks. You just admit it. We are all not going to tell you the whole story. And that is true. It's wrong. It's a sin. But that's not what he's talking about here. You want to avoid blame. I get it. You don't actually say everything that you ought to say. If you were speaking to God, you might say it. But speaking to somebody else, you're going to be a little bit of a hypocrite in that. But that's like a negative hypocrisy. What we're talking about here is this active, open hypocrisy where people are trying to get credit for what they are not. They're trying to, or are they wanting that glory of men? Are they wanting that show in the flesh? Let's look at it. Galatians chapter 6, verse 12. We find it in all areas of Christianity. We find it even in our own churches sometimes. We have to be careful. We need to keep our minds on what God is telling us about that. Look at chapter 6, verse 12 of Galatians. He says, as many as desire to make a fair show in the flesh. You know something? Even as Christians, we got to be careful making a show in the flesh. Even in our preaching. You know, I have heard sound doctrine, solid people. In fact, I grew up around these kind of preachers who would make a show in their preaching. The way they preached, they would make a show to give the impression that they were more righteous than the rest of us. I see it all the time to this day. I used to be completely guilty of it. Preach hard against sin so you'd think I don't have that problem. Ooh, man. And then you read what he's saying. He says, watch out for this fair show in the flesh. A whole lot of the hard preaching that you hear is really not so much about how much they hate sin as it is how much they want you to think they hate sin. And you find out how often these hard preachers against sin fall into sin. They fall in it all the time. Not just because they set themselves up in front of the devil and challenged him, and sometimes they do that. But it's because they're not real. They're not really what they pretend to be. And in all of us, we have a tendency to do that. Now, I realize sometimes you just want to hide your sin so you don't give the whole story about who you are. I get it. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about trying to make a show in the flesh. Not just by wearing funny clothes so that people will think you're holier than the rest of us.
But whatever it is, you make a show in the flesh, a hypocrisy, and what you've done is you've decided, I'm not going to be like the apostles. I'm not going to be like Jesus. I'm not even going to listen to their warnings. I'm going to pretend something. I'm going to pretend to be a certain way. I'm going to pretend. People will think I pray more if I act this way or if I say this. Do you realize how dangerous this is? Do you realize how anti-apostolic this is? That's not the way they were. They really were what they pretended to be. They lived their lives simply, openly. They didn't make pretense prayers. Be careful of your pretense prayers. You really ought to be careful what you say in your prayers in public. We have prayer meetings here on Wednesday night. Some of you didn't know that, but we do. We have prayer meetings here on Wednesday night. We get here, and sometimes you'll get somebody in a prayer group, and boy, can they pray. They pray deeply. They pray eloquently. They pray amazingly. And it kind of like turns your stomach if you're used to just regular simple prayers. You think, why do you pray like that? What's the point? Why are you making a show of your prayer? What's the pretense? What's the idea? Be careful. You avoid it. You stay away from that. And really, listen, when you see somebody act like that, it ought to turn your stomach a little bit. You ought to turn away from them. You ought to say, that's not what I'm looking for. Why? They warned you. Jesus actually goes to the trouble to warn you, after my departing, other people are going to come in and they're going to have a different attitude. They're going to be pretending. They're going to be making a fair show in the flesh. They're going to dress funny. They're going to be one called Father. Immediately, you say, did you say I need to call you Father? Did you say that? And something comes to your head, so I'm going to go back there and read that again. Yep, Jesus said for me not to follow you. Jesus said not to go down your road. Jesus said not to even do that, not to even accommodate you, not to humor you. You're not right. That's not the way it's supposed to be. Jesus didn't even ask for that. He said, I glorify not myself. Look at John chapter 7. Jesus warned us about these people. Chapter 7, look at verse 18. Jesus talks about it. He says, he that speaketh of himself seeketh his own glory. Be careful, preachers, especially young preachers. Don't talk about yourself too much. You might be given clues. You see, but he that seeketh his glory that sent him, the same is true, and no unrighteousness is in him. You know what Jesus said? Don't talk about yourself. You know what Paul said? We preach Christ crucified. We don't preach ourselves. We don't talk about ourselves. This is Paul saying, we do not talk about ourselves. We talk about Jesus. And Jesus says when he was here, he did not seek his own glory. He wasn't talking about himself. He wasn't talking about how good a person he was. He didn't even make a whole lot of comparisons between him and them. Once in a while, he'd say, you haven't convicted me of sin. He would say that, so he made a clear difference. And he would say, I'm from above and you're from beneath. But he did not go around showing how much better he was than you. He didn't go around talking about how many good works he does. But have you ever seen preachers stand behind the pulpit and start talking about themselves? Yep. And about what they do and what they've done? Especially those that are looking for support. Well, yeah, I'm not going to get into that. That's a whole different. Okay, let's go a little bit farther. I'm just going to read a couple of verses. Look at John 5:41. I don't have time to go into these. I receive not honor from men. That was Jesus' attitude. You hearing that? I receive not honor. How about having that attitude? When somebody wants to honor you, say no. I don't accept that. And when somebody soaks it up, they're not being like Jesus. When somebody gets that honor, you know how sometimes we'll really honor somebody, give an announcement, say, now after this, Brian Tebow is going to be preaching, and he's one of these. And you know, I get that. But his attitude ought to be, I receive not honor from men. What Bill says about me is meaningless. And that goes both ways, too, even if I say something bad about him. It's just meaningless. I'm not the one that's going to judge him, and that's not the one that's not the honor that matters. His attitude is, I don't receive honor from men. They can say anything they want to about me. Good or bad makes no difference. They don't even have to spell my name right. Look at verse 44. How can ye believe which receive honor one of another? This is Jesus' attitude. How can you believe if you receive honor one from another? And seek not the honor that cometh from God only. Look at Jesus' attitude. But the people in this Christianized world who desire honor, they are hypocrites. Let's go to another one. Look at John 12:43. This is John the Apostle speaking. Not Jesus. This is John the Apostle. He also had a little issue with these kind of people. Let's read verse 32. Nevertheless, among the chief rulers also many believed on him, but because of the Pharisees they did not confess him, lest they should be put out of the synagogue. And look at this disdaining comment. He says, for they love the praise of men more than the praise of God. And that happens all the time. People just give up on pleasing God just to get that little praise of men, that pitiful pittance praise of men. 1 Thessalonians chapter 2, verse 6. 1 Thessalonians 2, verse 6. Nor of men sought we glory. This is Paul the Apostle saying how he acted when he was in the Thessalonians. He was in Thessalonica. He says, listen to us. Pay attention to how we acted among you. We were like this. We were like that. We nurtured you. We cared about you. And then he says, nor of men sought we glory. And you know what? Some people come, men come, and they are seeking glory. They are seeking honor. They are seeking preference. They are seeking special words. They want you to think a certain way about them. They love the praise of men. That's what they're going for. That's what they want. Can you discern? Can't you tell? Did you know you're supposed to? You're supposed to discern. You're supposed to notice that guy, he's seeking glory. He's seeking honor of men. He's not like the apostles. Jesus warned me about him. You ought to have that attitude. Why aren't you judging these people more harshly? And if you don't, somebody's going to come and fool you. You've got to have this attitude. I'm looking for people who are followers of Christ as Christ was a follower, followers of Paul as Paul was a follower of Christ. People who follow their example. Okay, Colossians 2:18, just to end it. Colossians 2:18. Let no man beguile you of your reward in a voluntary humility. Pay attention to that phrase. Voluntary humility. Did you know there's a whole lot of faked humility? The Bible talks about faked love. The Bible talks about faked faith. Phony. It'll say feigned or something. These are phonies. These are people who are pretending to be humble. You ever seen somebody pose like this? Ought to make you sick to your stomach. And that's all I got time for.